Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Jim Garrity of National Review is back today. And, Jim, we have good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual. All of them deal in some form or fashion with the ongoing debacle that is Obamacare. Let's start with the good. And this is, of course, tinged with a little bit of typical Clintonian pragmatism. Bill Clinton, whose wife is most likely going to be the prohibitive favorite for the Democratic nomination in 2016, is now suggesting that the president make good on that promise, that if you like your plan, you can keep it. He was speaking in specifically response to young people who are making money well above the poverty line but are still getting stuck with this promise being revoked by the president and are facing much higher premiums.
I met a young man this week who has a family, two children, bought in the individual marketplace. His policy was canceled and one was substituted for it that doubled his premium. Now, I asked him, I said, same coverage? He said, yeah. And I said, but are your co-pays and deductibles the same? He said, no, they're much, much lower. So he said, in the years when I use health care, I might actually save money. But he said, you know, we're all young and we're all healthy. So I personally believe, even if it takes a change in the law, the president should honor the commitment the federal government made to those people and let them keep what they got.
Well, first of all, Jim, that young man's an anomaly in the fact that his deductible and copay are going down. A lot of people are finding it very much the opposite. But very interesting that Bill Clinton, who was the cheerleader for this like 2 months ago, is now suggesting a very different course of action what the president wants.
This is a key moment in this. It's really kind of intriguing to see how much delaying the individual mandate became this crazy right-wing idea. And then a couple of the vulnerable red state Democrats started saying it. When Obama has forced Bill Clinton to be in a situation where Bill Clinton cannot say, oh, those were all junk plans, you know, scam plans, or all the other things that they were sneering about, you know, groups like the nonprofit Kaiser Permanente or Blue Cross Blue Shield, these are not fly-by-night Uncle Vinny's health insurance or something like that. You know, this, so what Clinton is doing here is basically saying the Obama spin is untenable, that you really cannot insist that this is all just a matter of people leaving bad plans and they're going to get better plans. They know they're not going to get better plans. They know they're going to get more expensive plans. And the plans are going to be more expensive because they include a lot of stuff that the average person is never going to use. From the consumer point of view, you want your health insurance to be as a la carte as possible. If you don't want to pay for drug treatment because you don't think you're ever going to become a drug addict, that makes a lot of sense. If you're a guy and you don't want to pay for maternity care, that makes a lot of sense. For the health insurance company's point of view, they want you paying for as much as possible because that helps cover the people who end up costing more in benefits than they do in premiums. Clinton is kind of a useful leading indicator on this, and a lot of people are seeing this as an indicator of Hillary Clinton. I think if Hillary Clinton comes out and offers something that appears critical of Obamacare, you'll see a mass movement in Congress. Already you're hearing some House Democrats saying, look, we can't vote against the Upton bill, which is supposedly supposed to let grandfather plans, the current existing plans, in for another year. By the way, there are a whole bunch of people who say that really isn't workable. Once an insurance company has canceled a plan, they can't just say, ipso presto changeo, it's back. The insurance companies have basically set themselves up for Obamacare to be fully implemented and for them to suddenly be told, oops, never mind, we're changing the rules. People would not necessarily have the option to get their plans back. The chaos of Obamacare is accelerating. The fact that Democrats are being put in a really, really awkward situation is only good news for us.
You know, when Bill Clinton has realized that it can't be spun, it can't be spun. So
yes.
Good. As you said, a very good leading indicator there. Okay, on to the bad martini now. Whether or not President Obama was completely in the dark on how horrible healthcare.gov was is still a matter of great debate. But apparently, at least according to his own testimony, the project manager from the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, a guy named Henry Chow, was apparently in the dark about at least a specific memo describing all the security holes in the system as recently as the early part of September. Here's Cheryl Atkinson of CBS News going through the story.
Chow said he was unaware of this September 3rd government memo written by another senior official at CMS. It found two high-risk issues, which are redacted for security reasons. The memo said the threat and risk potential to the system is limitless. The memo shows CMS gave deadlines of mid-2014 and early 2015 to address them. But Chow testified he'd been told the opposite. "What I recall is what the team told me is that there were no high findings." Chow testified security gaps could lead to identity theft, unauthorized access, and misrouted data. According to federal standards, high risk means the vulnerability could be expected to have a severe or catastrophic adverse effect on organizational operations, assets, or individuals.
That would have been good information to know, right, Jim?
One of my favorite readers, a guy named Bruce Webster, who studies these sorts of things professionally, talked about early on about a concept he called the thermocline of truth. And folks who've worked on big projects are probably familiar with this concept, that if you want to know how a big, complicated project is going, don't talk to the guy at the top. The guy at the top of the pyramid has the least knowledge about how it's actually going. And the folks in the bottom have the most accurate sense. They know all the problems. And one level up, you get a slightly less accurate, slightly cheerier perspective. And then, you know, as you go up the ladder, people know less and less about how the project is really progressing. Well, here is a case suggesting that the thermocline of truth, as Bruce Webster calls it, was a lot lower than anybody expected, meaning that, you know, Obama says, well, I had no idea what these problems are going on. Sebelius says, well, I had no idea these problems. And now we're finding out that the person who's basically in charge of security is not getting key memos saying, oh, my goodness, we have a glaring problem here that's going to take years to fix here. In light of this, it's really hard to believe that this site is secure and that the, you know, limited number of folks, you know, to foreshadow our next martini, the folks who have already put their personal information into the system have very good reason to be a little unnerved about this. And it's very clear this project was nowhere near ready. And that includes the security aspects, which, oh, by the way, early on they were telling us that despite all the other problems they had, oh, don't worry, we had the security part nailed down just fine.
Unbelievable. Just absolutely unbelievable. Well, we're supposed to find out sometime this week. The official date is the 15th, I think, but we might find out a little bit sooner. The official number of Obamacare enrollees since the exchange officially opened and has been sporadically available since October 1st. But a double-headed crazy martini here. First of all, the goal was 500,000. The Wall Street Journal reporting yesterday that it's probably going to be closer to 50,000, which is obviously not very good. Now the Washington Post this morning saying it's actually right now, as of last week's numbers, less than 40,000. So we're well under 10% of what was expected in the first few weeks of this exchange. But then here's the money paragraph that you also highlighted in the campaign spot today. According to one person with knowledge of the figures, slightly fewer than 40,000 people had selected a health plan as of last week. The figures are derived from reports that the government sends to each participating insurer early every evening, letting them know which customers have signed up for that day. And if that weren't enough, Sarah Cliff of the Washington Post also reporting that the Obama administration, despite these pathetic numbers, even those are fudged because they're not just including people who have actually paid for a plan, which is the way it's always been counted in the insurance industry, but people who have a plan sitting in their online shopping cart but have not yet paid. So, Jim, even the pathetic results are not accurate.
On the one hand, you're seeing a lot of preemptive spin from folks on the left saying, well, look, we always knew because of the problems on the website, we always knew this was going to be bad news. And yes, we knew it was going to be bad. I don't know if we thought it was going to be this bad. Most states are saying they're in the neighborhood of 3% of what they wanted, where they wanted to be at, and, you know, one quarter of the time for the sign-up period has gone by. So needless to say, they are way, way, way behind schedule. Now, those numbers will go up. Yes, you can expect, you know, some of the things to start slower because a lot of people are going to procrastinate and all the traditional disclaimers apply. But let's face it, these are abysmal numbers. We're talking about, you know, 40,000 to 50,000 in the federal one, another 50,000 in the states, and that state total doesn't count Massachusetts, California, and Oregon. Now, Massachusetts, people already have – everyone should have health insurance because of RomneyCare, right? So you wouldn't expect a lot of people to be signing on through there. It's not a whole, like a large chunk of uninsured are suddenly going to say, oh, got to do it because of the federal plan. Then you have California, and California is a big state. So, you know, we'll see how California is doing. But then, of course, there's Oregon, and Oregon has zero so far because they have failed to get their website functioning at all. And now they're desperately trying to make up ground by having lots and lots of folks do it through paper ones. What is really kind of astounding about this is this, you know, that even at this point, like they know they're going to get a, you know, a bad news cycle. they've tried to prepare us. The numbers are terrible. The fact that, you know, remember early on they kept saying, well, we don't have the exact data figures, but look at the web traffic. Look at how many hits we have. Look at how many, you know, people started the application process. You know, Greg, if Radio America said, we're going to measure the number of people who think about tuning in to our broadcast, or National Review Online is going to tell our advertisers, here are the number of people who started to click on our website and then clicked away or something, you know, like that, you know, like ultimately, if you're in the business of selling something, you need people to not just put it into their shopping cart. You need them to actually purchase. You know, the check has to clear. The credit card has to be accepted. The cash has to be turned over. People need to give you money, and thus things get started. So everyone's been insisting that, you know, forget all the numbers of web hits or calls to the call centers or all that kind of stuff. The real measuring stick is how many people not just sign up for the insurance, they send that check to pay for the first month, and then they have health insurance. And that number is astonishingly low. I think there are two things that are that kind of stand out about this and kind of, you know, make this truly our crazy martini. One, that they made a, you know, this was always an implausible lie, and now we have the proof that they're getting updates every night and that they could at any point add up the numbers and say, okay, here's how many we have. They chose not to do that because they knew the numbers were bad. And then the second thing is the sense that even at this point, they're still going to try to fudge it. That you know, well, look, let's throw in the people who started to purchase but who haven't paid for it yet, and that'll make it seem better, and then people will think that Obamacare isn't such a miserable failure. And so, you know, it really is an overwhelming whiff of desperation from Sibelius and the crew over there these days. And we haven't even gotten to the question of how many of them are old and sick versus how many people are young and healthy, of course.
We have many martinis left this year, though. So
yes, we do, yeah. We're going to have to tap into the strategic martini reserve because we, you know, skeptics of the Obama administration expected bad news, but man, this, even by the standards of the stimulus and cash for clunkers and other ignoble moments of this administration, this is the Obama administration's biggest, most miserable failure. And that's really saying something so far. And no sign that it's going to get any better anytime soon.
Once again, adding more ominous overtones to the phrase, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. Jim, yeah. Welcome back. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us again on Wednesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.